Yes, Kristen. Let's see.
Hi, Laura. Are you able to hear
Hi.
me okay?
I'm getting all of the things turned on that I need to get. Okay, so you need to be a co-host.
Thank you. And
And
I'll
then,
start my video to make sure I'm coming through.
yeah. And you had a co-presenter, am I remembering?
I do. She's going to be joining us and monitoring the chat.
Okay. All right. And then, as Shannon, you're the presider.
Yes.
So I need to make you a co-host.
Okay. Kristen, can I ask how you pronounce your last name real quick?
Absolutely, Shannon. Thank you. Nice to see you.
You
You
too.
pronounce it like M-A-Y, so May Maris.
May Maris. Okay,
Yes.
perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and your co-presenter, remind me her name.
Her name is Tammy Tacker.
Okay, so I will make her a co-host as well. And then one question, as Shannon introduced, or as I, anyway, so you do you want questions generally to come through the chat, or do you want people to raise their hands?
Gosh, I know that my co-presenter, Tammy, is possibly going to have some challenging times to manage the chat. She's in a location with a little bit less reception than she was hoping for. So I think I'll go ahead if maybe Shannon, you can help me and kind of collect them, and maybe I'll take a pause halfway through and also at the end.
Okay,
Great.
sounds great. Right. For some reason, this is supposed to be a carousel that's changing slides every few seconds, but I don't seem to be able to make it work. Well, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. So those of you that are in the room or coming in the room, I don't know if you can see my background or Shannon Ruth's background, but we're hoping that we will have a face-to-face conference. Oops, this side. Yep, in Phoenix in 2021. And that's our amazing logo that we've come up with. So we're pretty excited that hopefully everyone will be coming to town. But anyway, get that on your radar. Yes, here's to working with vaccines. I hear you. Hello from Iowa. What part of Iowa are you from, Michael? Yeah, if everybody wants to put in the chat where they're from, that would be great. Just to get a sense of the room. Cedar Rapids. I have a good friend who lives in Muscatine and teaches at West Liberty High School. Orlando. Oh, this is great. Few people just down the street from me in Arizona. Got Atlanta. Hello, Cindy. Ronald's from Kentucky, state I've never been to, but it is on my bucket list. Sherry, yeah, we are sad that we weren't able to come to Washington. That was a really hard decision. But now that we're here in November, yeah, that's the right one. New York City, El Paso, Hollywood, Florida, Texas, Boulder. Oh, we've got some pretty, yes, the recordings and slides will be available, Fawn, in mymatic.org. I'm not sure of the timeline. It may be a week or two before the recordings are available. College, well, yeah, I knew Rob was from College State. Hershey, Pennsylvania, Hershey chocolate. I love chocolate. Yeah, Fawn, I believe they will be sending notifications to the email. So I myself, I teach at Glendale Community College in Glendale, Arizona, not California. But right now I'm sitting at home and in Mesa, Arizona. That's where I'm at. Isn't it fun? We're seeing people from all over the country, even though we can't really see you. Yeah. Centralia, Washington. Nice. Nice. Got about two or three more minutes before. Oh, Tammy's here. So I will go ahead and make her a co-host. Now that she's here, where is Tammy? There you are. Oh, it keeps moving. There we go. Oh, wait, no. Yes. Okay, Tammy, you should be a co-host. So is there any snow in your neck of the woods? Anybody got snow? We've got sunshine here in Phoenix area. The picture looks very similar to snow. Snow in Rexburg, Idaho. Snow, I'm in shorts. Well, you know, that rain in South Florida, Stephen, you could just send it our way. I don't know, we've had much measurable rain in, I don't know, 6 months or more. So yeah, it's been tough. Rain, snow, awesome. North Carolina, nice, nice. Yeah. In northern Arizona, they had some snow up in Flagstaff, I think Monday, beginning of the week. There was a front that moved through, but nothing here in the Phoenix area. Maybe Arkansas. Heavy frost. Oh, it tried to snow. Yeah. Sometimes it's better if it does. 72 mile per hour wind gust. Ooh. That's sad. Well, yeah, San Diego. Yeah, it's usually beautiful there. Oh, Pennsylvania. Nice. Ah. 3 years. One time it snowed briefly in the middle of the night. Yeah, Yuma, I can believe that. In the Phoenix area, we every 20 years or so might get a skiff of snow, but not typically. Sunny day in Florida. Inch of rain. Oh, I wish we had some rain. Yeah, Dave's right. 10 years. We saw snow just a couple years ago, I think, if I remember right. Okay, I show 11 o'clock straight up. So I do want to welcome you to the AMATIC 2020 virtual conference. And I'm grateful that you all are here, and I'm grateful for our presenter and our presider. So I will turn it over to Shannon, and I will just try and monitor the technology on the back end.
Awesome, thanks Laura, and welcome to everybody for this session on A Better Future for Online Discussion Boards. It's my pleasure to introduce our two presenters today, Tammy and Kirsten. Tammy Tacker's online teaching journey started over 17 years ago, where in addition to teaching, she has served as the subject matter expert on several course revisions and currently serves as the course lead for the highest enrollment math course, Survey of Mathematics. She earned her BS and MS in mathematics and has taught all levels of mathematics courses. Kirsten K. Maymaris is a faculty member at Purdue University's Global Mathematics Department with over 20 years of experience in online education. Kirsten has experience in a diversity of roles in online education, including developing course content, managing and maintaining online course software, and direct facilitation of online courses. Kirsten has her BS in both mathematics and computer science, and an MS in mathematics with an emphasis in educational technology. Welcome to Kirsten and Tammy.
Thank you so much, Shannon, and thank you, Laura. Let me do an audio check to make sure that I'm talking and you can hear me before I start rambling on too much. So let me know in the chat if you can hear me or give me a thumbs up. Awesome. Excellent. So here we are. And I have to say that at first I was like, oh, darn, I'm so disappointed. I can't see my colleagues and meet new people in person. But I have never had this many people come to my presentation. Oh my goodness. So maybe there's a positive to that. So I'm going to go with it and look at the positives. So, and look forward to seeing you next year in Phoenix. It's very close to me. So I might even just drive on over instead of having to fly like I usually have to for the MATIC conferences. So yes, always a silver lining. So what we're going to talk about today, or what I'd like us to have a discussion on, is the asynchronous discussion forums. So they're kind of the ubiquitous feature in a lot of the online courses, and that's where a lot of the personality can come through with the course design. So let's see here. Anybody a Clint Eastwood fan? We're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start off with the good. I'm kind of a positive person. And so what we have here is there's lots of benefits to the online discussion forum. It allows for students to work at their own pace. They can reflect, they can work on their writing skills. It can involve more introverted students that allows them to kind of think about the math and make some connections with their own lives, with their own experiences. It's a way that they can learn from their peers. You know, if you allow the students to view other people's posts, then hey, it's a great way, more examples, more experiences to connect with the math, right? So there's lots of positives to the asynchronous discussion forum. Let's talk about the challenges, okay? So there's lots of challenges, right? The students sometimes don't get involved to the last second right before the deadline and midnight, the night before it's due. You know, they can, the amount that the instructor participates has been shown to share how much the students will participate, right? Students feel disconnected because it is isolating. And, you know, you have text and you lack a lot of the emotional cues. A lot of the emotion is just kind of gone. But it is a way for us to have a social network and talk about math at the same time. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there are some challenges. And of course, we have the reality, we have the ugly, because students will oftentimes just reword something. There's just like a lack of substance, or it really just, there's no actual sense at all. It's just nonsense, right? Because who reads the discussion post? Do the instructors ever read it, or do other students read it? Or they're just plain old kind of fake, right? So we have some challenges, we have some benefits, we have some reality. And what I was going to share with you are some research-based recommendations. And these are recommendations from, this article is referenced at the end of the presentation. It's from 2018 in the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning in Psychology, but it has great benefit to apply to the math classroom, to the math online discussion forums, right? So I encourage you to read that. And in that article, she shares four specific sort of categories for improving the effectiveness of the asynchronous discussion. I'll talk about them kind of in groups of two, and then give lots of connections with the math. So you're welcome to read it on your own and get some of the nitty gritty, but this is just a way for me to kind of couch what we're talking about today. So the first is purpose and expectation. So by communicating to the students, kind of setting the stage, It increases their motivation, tells them the reason that they should participate, gives them the value to doing this by providing some extrinsic motivation, like, you know, a portion of your grade is going to be, is going to be assigned to how well you do on the discussion. Okay, it gives them some weight and lends them the reason to do so as well. Gives them, not only gives them a purpose, but says, yes, and we will be able to compensate you for that if you work hard on that. I think in a lot of our classes, we give on the order of like 30% of their grade towards the discussion forum. Now, it's important to know that, am I not sharing my screen? Hold on a second. Yikes. Are you able to see my slide presentation?
No. You were looking at us though, so it didn't feel weird.
Oh, darn. Well, hey, I want to share my presentation now, too.
Okay.
I thought it was. Yikes. Okay, how about that? Is that better?
Yep.
Oh, dear. Well, thank you so much for letting me know. It's long since in the chat, but I was going to thank whoever let me know. So where was I? So recommendation one. Explain the value and the importance, okay? Give them some intrinsic, extrinsic motivation, and always follow a grading rubric. Always helpful to show the show how you are going to be grading them, giving them the scores. Next, we have two, setting the structure. This goes hand in hand with providing them the purpose, but if you allow multiple deadlines throughout the unit or the week, it gives them some goals to reach. Oftentimes in the management systems, you can allow them to see other people's posts and not, right? And I'm kind of on the side of allowing students to learn from others. If you set up your discussion prompt appropriately, then it's not a big deal because there's not you can learn and see examples just like you do in the textbook, but you the students have to create their own words because of the way the discussion is set up. So there's value to both. There's recommendations to set aside a separate discussion for the socialness of it. And then you keep one that's topical to the math content. And there's also suggestions to provide maybe not a different alternative to the linear discussion structure and group students together individually. So there's a smaller number of students that they have to read discussion posts and they can have a real quality math conversation. So we have some lovely recommendations and some key points to kind of think of, right? Let's talk about this in terms of math. So hopefully some of these strategies, some of these ideas will be helpful to you as you look at your course, redesign it, or create an online course, as we know that possibly that's at least for the near future, that might be how it has to be. So strategy one, allow for them to make corrections, you know, set the stage, set the requirements that you can participate. If you make a mistake, no big deal. You can just post a correction, reply to your own post and make the correction. We put it actually in our grading rubric that, you know, you can make a mistake, but hey, just correct it before the end of the unit, before the end of the week, so that we know that you've learned from that and we can celebrate any of those mistakes. The showing your steps, you know, it's not super easy sometimes to type out your calculation, all the steps, all the work that you've done to get the solution, but sometimes it's important, or maybe it's important just to write down the solution and interpret the results. But either way, if you have the process or the interpretation, make sure you, that's the emphasis, not necessarily the right answer. You may have to provide them some guidance for how to do this, because if they have to, if they're doing it on pencil and paper, they can, you know, click a, quickly make a screenshot or take a picture and upload that and embed that into the post. There you can do videos. You can have them show them the steps or maybe a video on how to use the GUI interface of the discussion forum. So just know that that kind of comes along with the idea. If you do expect them to show your work, you may have to give them some guidance on how to do so. Another strategy that we employ is to request, give them guidance for each of their posts. So a kind of a universal standard is to have one initial post where you answer a discussion question that's maybe a larger percentage of the assignment, more involved, where you have to create your own work. And then you have two or three other secondary replies that that the student is replying to a classmate. And so that's helpful. That's where the conversation comes in. But we found it really helpful to provide directions also for those secondary replies. And that can be in the form like, double check your classmates' work or give some interpretation or make some connection with your own experience and their post so that you are extending, you're expanding the math conversation. You can also just, you know, have the secondary replies be completely open-ended and just there for in the engagement piece, really just truly open-ended, just let them have fun and socialize. But at the same time, it's within within the context of the math conversation. And a last strategy here, which is kind of a little bit of some good meat here, thinking ahead of what we're going to be doing here, but of teamwork. Let's do a group project online. Now, that seems, I know that gives some people a little like ants in their stomachs a little bit to think about that possibility, because group work is challenging, even in a traditional brick and mortar situation. And now try to do it online. Well, that's challenging, but it's important to do, because there's research that says students have a hard time to keeping track of that linear conversation. They're overloaded with all the other classmates' posts, and they can't have a quality math conversation if it's just linear as it is. So let's do some group work. Let's do some teamwork. Now, as I was thinking through how to kind of encourage the teamwork in the asynchronous discussion forum, there's lots of cool kind of technology pieces that you can use to do so. But there's also wonderful advantages of just the simple methods of collaborative documents. And so what I'm going to share with you right now is one example of what we do in our college algebra class. So this is in the unit where we talk about functions. And which is, you know, for the college algebra student and also for the non-math major, not something that's really an exciting piece. So we've created a context of a secret spy meeting, and we group our students in about 5 to 8 people. And we found that that's kind of a sweet spot for the number. So it's enough people that there's people that will participate, even with those that don't like to participate in the beginning, but it maybe has some of those go-getters involved, but it's not too large that you can keep track of it. It's kind of like the bars of a histogram, 5 to 10 is kind of the sweet spot, right? So we have each a team member pick a location to, or pick a detail of a secret meeting. And so they're their own little secret spy team, and they have to decide, well, where should we meet? What should we wear? What time should we meet? What should we say when we get there? What should we reply when we get there? And that is, everybody will take a short phrase with that detail, and they're going to code it up with a function. Then their secondary replies are, you will take one of your classmates' secret encoded message and decode it. And so then you can learn that detail about the message. And then the third reply, then they will summarize, okay, what has been shared so far? What are the details that have been shared? And then all of a sudden, voila, you have all of the meetings that you can do. And David, I see your post here, so I'm just going to answer it real quick. Do we group them online? So our learning management system, we use D2L, allows for group discussions. But you can do it very simply in your discussion by creating a group one thread. You know, you can do it that way too. There are lots of ways. And you can do other pieces like, we'll see in a minute about, say, a collaborative document. So that's kind of the gist of the college algebra example. And let me give you a little more detail, because we're actually going to do this, because we are ourselves right now are kind of like we're in an asynchronous discussion forum. We're in a virtual meeting where we know people are out there, and to try to get some interactivity, we're going to do this activity. So you got to pay attention. All right. So this is the directions that they have to do as well. We're going to do a picnic, just to keep it into one word. Okay. So I want you to think of a food that you could bring to the picnic. The example I have here on my slide is, I'm going to bring cookies. And the first thing that you do with your food word is you'll change all of the letters into a number. I'll just use a simple lookup table, which is on the left side here, that tells you the position of that letter in the alphabet, right? So for example, the letter C in cookies would translate to the number 3. So again, hopefully you're thinking about your food item, maybe write it down and start making all of the letters in that word and that food into numbers, okay? Then what you do is you take those numbers and you're going to code it up, so that if by chance somebody were to, you know, sneak around and see the word or see what your the food, the message that you're sharing, they would wouldn't be able to read it, because we're going to code it up. And only the people in this room here, only in the virtual seminar here, know that the coding function is 2x. We're going to multiply every number by 2. Okay. So awesome, Christine. Welcome, Rob. So I see a lot of people already participating. So we're going to do that, but I've got a collaborative document that we're going to do. So go ahead and think about that. And actually, I'll put this up right now here. Let me kind of speed forward here. And then we will, because people are kind of engaged, which is awesome. So here's the document. You can, I think, maybe click on it. If not, I will share my screen. And it's very much just a very simple, you know, Google Doc, but it's a collaborative space that we can all share our secret or our encoded food. Okay, so go ahead and click into that here. I can, let me put it in the chat as well.
You need to put it in the chat.
Sorry, thank you. My colleague was, you know, we're working together. So there's the document in the chat. The link, please. I think you'll probably need a Gmail account to edit, but otherwise you're welcome to see it. I thought with this many people, it might be hard to be able to do it in the chat. We'll see. I don't see anybody in the document, so give me a little feedback.
Did you enter in the chat?
I did. Let me try this again.
Did you send?
How's that? Okay, excellent. Okay, so again, here are the directions. I'll just minimize this. You're going to take your, I'm going to have to go forward. Let me try to go back. You're going to take your word.
Kristen?
Yeah.
Or Kirsten. It says we need access.
Okay. Pardon me. Hold on 1 second. You can see it right here on the screen, but that should have been set, but it will make sure that it does. Maybe it just didn't save. How about that?
Yes, that worked.
Sweet. Excellent. And I've never tried this with 100 some people either. But okay. So again, go ahead and you'll take a food, whatever you'd like to do, make that word into numbers by the position of that letter in the alphabet. I know this is kind of crazy. A lot of people on the document. I know, I've never done this, Shannon, with so many people, but hey, there's always a good time to try it. Might as well try it now. And then you'll take that number and you'll double it. You'll multiply it by 2 so that not everybody could be able to decipher the word. Excellent. So I'll just give you a few minutes here. Thank you all for participating. And so I should say, don't decode your message just yet, because I'm going to have, instead of you decoding your own message, I'm going to have other people, other people will pick a word, a secret number to decode. And I know this is a math environment, so I think you should probably know how to decode it. But I see a lot of people putting it down there, which is great. So continue on and include your food item. Take your time. I'm going to go ahead and on the screen, I'm going to share with you how to decode your message. And you will pick somebody else's, you know, meet somebody new in the Google Doc here and decode their food item, their picnic. Oh my gosh, this is awesome. I never even knew if it could work this way with that many people. So good, I'm glad it's working out. And thank you for testing it out with me. So what you're gonna do is pick somebody else, pick their line. And because we multiplied our number by 2, the inverse operation, the inverse function to decode it would be to divide by 2. So for my word, which is encoded, it'd be, I take my letter, my number 6, and I divide it by 2 to get 3. And then again, use the lookup table to find out the letter that's associated with that position in the alphabet. So you'll be able to see that I'm going to bring to the picnic, cookies. Excellent. So go ahead, take some time and try to decode other people's messages. Ooh, somebody's bringing meatballs. I love it. We've got cake. Fantastic. Pickles. What picnic wouldn't be complete without pickles? We have steak. Excellent. I mean, you know, this is as much fun as we can have in our virtual environment. We have melons and rolls and pies, kiwi. I love it. Cheese. A good picnic has to have cheese as well. Yeah, Catherine, I think it's a great idea for inverse functions as well, because it's really hard to kind of show the purpose for inverse functions. I mean, come on, it's, you know, it's very abstract. And most of our students are, I mean, this is a college algebra class, and they're not math majors, and they're IT related, their business, their psychology, nursing, criminal justice. Excellent. Good. We have some apples. I need to have some apples, but pizza is always good for a picnic too. Oatmeal, chips, pretzels. My goodness, we're going to have a feast. Ooh, yams. I love it. Good. Somebody's bringing some yummy tacos and even some coffee. Fantastic. Oh, good. Danielle, potato salad. Oh my gosh. Yes. Potato salad and picnic and pickles. We have a complete picnic here. Excellent. Thank you so much, everybody, for kind of having fun with this little activity and bringing together the idea that even in the virtual environment, even if it's asynchronous, I mean, we're doing it synchronous here, but you can imagine that this activity can work well with an asynchronous nature, right? So you have to, when you think of the teamwork, you want not only to have the members of the team contribute to a team project, but like many students, the group work doesn't necessarily bring on excitement to people because you don't want to have to wait for other people to complete their work. And so you try to make an individual parts that you can grade individually at the same time as contribute to the team as a whole. Great. Oh, I love it. Celery as well. And we've got several salads too. Excellent, I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you for playing this little errand activity. So just an example of how that, a virtual team work can actually work. So let me move on here in the interest of time. We have recommendations 3 and 4 are to look and to focus on quality, on effective question prompts, and also facilitation. So I'm going to focus a lot on creating effective question prompts because that is, as I was saying before, kind of the meat of the sandwich. It's where the creativity really can come in. We want to focus the question prompts on the higher levels of critical thinking, like synthesis or evaluation, analysis, work on the divergent type of questions instead of more open-ended that allow for multiple types of responses. And I'll talk about several different types of divergent questions. Variety is really, it's key, right? It keeps people engaged and happy and excited to work with in a text style of an online class. Facilitation for engagement, that is a huge recommendation too. Now this itself is its own talk. And so I'm gonna kind of sideline this because I could spend a whole workshop, a whole 3 hours on this topic. But let's look at a little bit talking about effective question prompts. Now, here's an example of a typical question, typical word problem that you see in the textbooks. And it's an attempt to, connect the math symbols to something real, something with words, right? But rarely are these true word, real world problems. Rarely are they situations that students encounter. So what I'm going to suggest that we look at is more the kind of situational math activities and questions. And those are questions that have a goal in mind or a question to solve. And this comes from Marilyn Burns, had kind of coined it, situational math, back in 2000. And it's where you have something that you're considering, like will the caffeine that you drank in the morning be affecting your sleep tonight? Or how much money do you need to help a friend who lost their home in the hurricane? Those are a couple examples that I'm gonna share. They're genuine problems that you can maybe ponder and think about and kind of hook and connect the math in of whatever topic that you're talking about. So here's an example, and I've got several examples to kind of spark your curiosity. And I welcome your ideas in the chat too. I'm not able to monitor them, but I'll stand back in a few minutes and then I can address some of those questions. I know that Tammy is kind of organizing some of the things in the chat, but I'm gonna try to share a bunch of examples to spark your imagination here. So this is an example from a college algebra where we're looking at rational exponents, right? It's kind of a simple skill and we're learning how to work with rational exponents and their connection with radicals, but we connect it to the half-life of caffeine. And it's a fantastic discussion that happens between people. I mean, I never knew that there was hot sauce that had caffeine in it. And I learned that in my discussion. So they talk about any kind of caffeinated beverage or, as it turns out, hot sauce. Here's an example of kind of a divergent style question that is just the playground. So the idea behind the playground is that they just have to interpret, explore, kind of look at something that's tangible to them. And I thought this was kind of appropriate that we've had this in the survey of math class, where students have to consider a friend in need. And with all the hurricanes and stuff, you know, it seemed actually kind of appropriate, kind of real life here. But the hidden math concept that they're exploring is estimation, approximation, but attaching it to something that's important. And you can have, it's amazing how you can have a lovely conversation about helping somebody out and, you know, kind of helping them to, and seeing how much money it might cost to fundraise and help them out. Another example of a divergent question is a focal point. So this is where you have one sort of program or project that you're working on where they have to explore it, learn some, gather some information, and then do some math about it. And the hidden math concept here is talking about percentages, and they have to calculate several types of percentages in terms of the budget, the personnel, how many people are affected. This is wonderful stuff you can take to a city council or take to a board of directors, for a community organization. So it has a lot of, it can have a lot of weight, and students can see the purpose to this. And in fact, they have to, in this discussion, they have to do the math, but they also have to present it as a professional memo to the city council. Another example here would be role playing. Again, we're trying to keep it variety, spice things up again, but adding in role playing has it lends some weight to exploring. And in this idea, we allow, this is in a discrete math class, and they are an IT consultant working to develop a simple growth model. With their introduction, they're just learning about sequences and series, and we're trying to model the growth of something in their world, whether it's the prairie dogs next door, or it's people growth, or maybe the fact that there's now so many more connections of laptops that you need, and so there's a growth in the connections that have to happen. I mean, it's kind of open-ended, but we can connect it to something and tie it back into, you know, you're playing the role of an IT consultant. Now, with all these examples, when you're creating your discussion prompts, I always am thinking of how to reduce the amount of plagiarism. I mean, the last recommendation I have is when you're setting up your discussion, really try to set it up so that it's less work for you and less able for the students to copy or plagiarize, whether it's another student or getting it online and whatnot. I mean, it's really kind of the bane of our existence, right, as online educators, right? So we have to, so a few techniques that we've found helpful is that to require current data and acquiring it online. So I'll give a couple examples, but that has a great, it's great opportunity because not only does it fall in line with the situational and real authentic situations, but it makes it so it's harder to grab something. If it's been, you know, shown online, well, whatever's been posted, 5 months ago is not gonna be current to what's in the class now. Also, we can require the students to grab information that's unique to them, whether it's in their own geographic location or maybe something specific to their hobbies or whatnot. You can also ask the class itself to create data, and that has power as well. So two examples that I can offer to share with you are in our business analytics class, where they have to look at both current and unique data. So it's a website, pollingreport.com, but that has continually has updates and shares polling results. And they have to look at the results and then tie that into their knowledge of learning the margin of error, the sample size, the confidence interval. It's a beautiful example how it's the website's always changing. So right there, you have the fact that the whatever they're posting, the students are posting, is going to be current, and they can pick whatever topic they want about it, right? Whatever, if they're interested in gun control, or if they're interested in environmental change, climate change, you've got polls to support that and to discuss. Another example, right now, what do we have? We have amazing data sets that are accessible in an international scale, all the way down to local, state, and county. So we can have, this is an outline of a discussion assignment where students can get the data that's behind that wonderful dashboard from Johns Hopkins, and they can download their own data for their own state and county. And with a little bit of Excel magic, you can look at the new case counts in their county and quickly do a time series graph of what it looks like. So they can compare it to the national average. They can look at 7-day moving averages. They can compare the whether it's exponential growth or linear growth. It's just, it's, you know, it's empowering to be doing it, getting the actual data and doing it for your area. So I think that is most of what I have to talk about, which leaves me a few minutes for questions. Here are some of my selected references that I think are just great, and they're wonderful reads and really kind of get me excited actually about course design and where we can go with the future of discussion forums. And you know, there's so much power even in asynchronous forums, and there's so many fun creative ways that we can connect it with math. So I think with that, I'll pass it on to Shannon. Maybe you can help me kind of go through. I can absolutely go back, you bet, Don, to the references. And the presentation materials will be live soon, I think, too.
Awesome. Lots of great feedback coming in, Kirsten. I think one thing that I wanted to share from the beginning was folks loved the live captioning on your Google slides. So we maybe learned a new trick there. There were several comments about that.
So I don't know if there are any specific questions. If they're embedded in chat a long time ago, I'm sure I haven't seen them. Please let me, you can just type them in again, and because I can monitor the chat now. There's way too much going on before for me to keep track of.
But, yeah. Kirsten, I have a question. Does your school have accessibility things? Because we are so strict on accessibility that we cannot do these things. Whatever we set in the beginning in the discussion is what it is. So we cannot keep changing it.
So are you referring to the actual discussion itself? We're very strict on accessibility, and that's why I actually didn't share a whole bunch of cool, like collaborative tools to do the teamwork activity. Keeping it simple has a lot of benefit, and so when we design a course, it's kind of designed for 5 years or so, or 3 to 5 years. We don't have the luxury of being able to redesign it all the time. So what we put in is what does stay. Does that answer your question? I'm maybe not quite sure.
No, yeah, So you have done all these things for the next 3 to 5 years is what you're saying, right? You don't change.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, you know, creatively, I mean, you know, we revise them. Maybe 5 years is a little bit long, depending on, I mean, college algebra, I think is revised usually, you know, 3 years or so. But you can set up the discussion, like the prompts themselves, such that it's general enough, but also specific. So by, picking websites that are, you know, are going to kind of stick around, or with the COVID example, you know, those websites, those data sets might not be available, but like make it a larger picture and provide them multiple options of data sets to look at. COVID being one of them. You can look back at actually the influenza data from back in the early 2000, you know, early century. But, you know, multiple ways to look at, say, a medical example of a discussion.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I can see there's some, let me see if I can go back. Let's see here. I have one question from Annie. Do you know of resources to get ideas for this type of discussion? Are you talking about gathering current data sets from that they can explore? Because there's, oh gosh, this is hard to manage here. ones that I go to data.gov, actually. It's a great one where you can grab lots of different kinds of data sets. But, you know, a simple Google search and pointed Google search on data sets on sports or data sets on medical, those, it's a great way to get some. But there's lots of free data sets available to you. And if you have anything specifically, Annie, I'd be happy to look that up too.
Kristen, I know it's hard. There's a lot in the chat. Tammy's helping in the chat too. But one question that came in was, Tammy just answered it about rubrics, grading rubrics.
Got it. There's one from Brian here about regarding Bloom's taxonomy and aiming for higher levels. How do you avoid going too high and scaring students out of wanting to participate? Absolutely. Because if you ask too open-ended of questions, they don't even know where to start. So, so some advice on that. You can have give guided directions. There's three posts in our discussions. There are three posts to do. So by providing them some guidance in the first couple, then you can for the secondary post two or post three, you can open things up even a little bit more. But scaffolding them with very much the steps of what to look for. So I don't know. For example, when we're looking at the caffeine example, right? Where they have to calculate. So one idea, they calculate the how much caffeine remains in their system after 2 hours, after 6 hours, the next day. And then open it up to say, hey, well, let's interpret this, let's evaluate them. What would this mean? What might this have to do with sleep? Or how might this affect your work the next day? What if you had caffeine multiple times in a row? Now this is a math class. So, but getting them to analyze and think about the calculations they did, that's what we're getting at, right? So, stepping through it, or providing them some guidance at the beginning and opening it up as the discussion and the conversation unfolds. And as a facilitator too, you can facilitate that, the higher, more critical thinking process. But it's always better when it's required and it's put in, in the directions itself. Add the link to the presentation in the chat. Christine, I will. I think I'm supposed to deposit my our slides into Myamatic, and so I'll make sure I do that in about 15 minutes here. David has a note. Do you recommend that students are blocked from seeing other students' posts until after their initial posts? You know, that is one school of thought, David. I am not on that train. Because I think students learn best from examples. There's lots of examples in the textbook. And if you design your discussion question and prompts and directions that as such, then it's usually not a problem. You don't have to worry about them copying because it's personalized enough, it's unique to them. So, they can get examples, they can learn from it, but also it helps a lot of the students from being intimidated. I mean, math online, I mean, those two things are kind of two whammies all at one time, right? So that's just what we do is we allow everybody to see posts. The students cannot delete any of their posts. So if they make an error, no big deal. It's a learning space. Post a reply to their post and others can learn from that as well. And it's a way to say, hey, mistakes are totally fine and we're gonna celebrate them. And the discussion board is a learning space. It's open for this time period only. So post, make mistakes, post corrections, and then we'll move on to the next topic. And Leslie, do you have students do a discussion post every week? Absolutely, we sure do. And it's the class conversation.
Okay, well, I have 11:45 now. So let's thank Kirsten and Tammy for their time. I put in the chat, everybody head over to myamatic.org. You don't have to be a member of AMATIC right now to access all of the conference materials that are there. So please, please head on over and take advantage of all of the resources that are available there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shannon and Laura. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Go Super ahead fun. And close this out so I can go start the next one.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.